Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The local housing authority, Opportunity Homes San Antonio, estimates that there are 113,000 families on the local public housing wait list. If you aren't painfully aware of the rising cost for local housing, then consider yourself lucky, because it's the source of worry and frustration for many families in San Antonio. They are housing insecure, and the causes could be the hot market and private equity investment groups seeking robust profits. And the question has been, can a local government do anything about the rising cost of housing when there are macroeconomic forces driving this problem? Well, District 5 City Council member Terry Castillo is looking for solutions, and she says she has found some. She is pushing a new city policy that aims at increasing and expediting affordable housing opportunities in San Antonio. And we're joined by Terry Castillo to explain and also to take your calls. You can call in with your questions and comments, your experiences with affordable housing in San Antonio. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Councilmember Castillo, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here. And this is, you know, I was telling you before, so much wonky, deep material goes into trying to figure out what is driving the problem and what are possible solutions. And you've come up with some proposals and you've taken them to City Council, and it's working through the process, different committees. But tell me about what it is that you're hoping to achieve here.
Whether you've lived in the city of San Antonio for months or generations, what folks know is that the increased cost of living is squeezing our families. Whether you live in a single family household or a family of four, folks are struggling to keep up with ends meet. And what we know, as you mentioned, with the Opportunity Home waitlist, is that we're continuing to see a need for families and seniors on that Opportunity Home waitlist. When we look at the data for Haven for Hope, we're seeing Haven at capacity with families and children that are in need of permanent shelter. And at the door, speaking to District 5 residents, one thing that's at the top of their list of priorities and needs and concerns is the cost of living and the need to create more deeply affordable housing. So what our team and I did is we researched and looked at what are practices throughout the state of Texas that other folks have implemented, and learned from case studies of what failing to do will result in, right? And when we look at the role of cities that have implemented transit-oriented development and have invested in transportation without policy protections to go hand in hand, we see an increased cost of living and oftentimes displacement of folks who live along these transit corridors. So we have a responsibility to ensure that we're putting in the policy protections that ensure that folks who live along transit corridors have an opportunity to stay in their homes.
What do you mean by transit corridor? I really don't know all these terms.
Yes, so a transit corridor, right now the city of San Antonio in conjunction with VIA are having conversations around transit-oriented development, and these follow essentially transit nodes and corridors, for example, the Green and Silver Line. And when we look at other systems throughout the nation, with the BART in particular, with Oakland and San Francisco, is that we saw without any protective policy measures for the established constituents and new neighbors, it's hard to find affordable housing, and it's hard to stay and maintain and keep up with property taxes and maintenance of your home without policy protection. So we must ensure that while we're having these conversations about transit-oriented development, that we're also prioritizing policy that protects people.
So when we have development, like you talk about the Silver Line and the Black, it's not the Silver and the Black Line, but it should be, but you know, because the Black and Silver are the Spurs. But when we have these new VIA routes that are coming online, that's going to probably increase development and rents in those areas? Is that the concern?
When we look at national trends and case studies, that's typically the case, is that along transit-oriented development corridors, we do see an increase of rents and property taxes.
And so you're looking to try to prevent that from happening. You don't want to drive people out of their homes in these areas as the property values and the rents go up?
Absolutely. We have a responsibility to research policy that helps mitigate community displacement and also unlock affordability with new construction. Because I think it's important that we highlight that while we are seeing new development, we have an opportunity with these policy proposals that I put forth to ensure that if there is new development, that there's opportunity for affordable units within those developments. And one of the proposals is STAY-SA, which essentially looks at the city's Unified Development Code. And many of these pieces already exist within our code. For example, Bone City Dennis and affordable dwelling units. And by encouraging city staff and stakeholders to go back and look at these current policies, how can we ensure that we're making it more appetizing for folks to want to utilize these codes? So essentially, how can we ensure that while there is new development, that there's deeply affordable and affordable units within these new projects?
And so that is based on a policy that was adopted in Austin, the Unlocked policy, right?
Councilman Greg Quezada did put forth Affordability Unlocked in response to Austin's housing crisis, yes.
And so, and that has already survived a legal challenge because some people were saying it wasn't appropriate. But essentially what it's trying to do is get rid of red tape.
Yes. So, for example, the city of San Antonio has the Strategic Housing Implementation Plan. And what it's suggesting is that we need to produce more permanent supportive housing. And while this was adopted a couple of years ago, we're in the queue to produce permanent supportive housing. But when we look at the implementation of Affordability Unlocked in Austin, they've been able to outpace the city of San Antonio with their construction of permanent supportive housing. So when we look at the metrics of the implementation of Affordability Unlocked, it's proven to produce and construct deeply affordable housing.
And so what's the red tape? You know, we don't like red tape, but sometimes it's there for a good reason, you know, safety and, you know, trying to deal with. But is it just outdated? Do we need to eliminate it because the problem has become so severe that we're saying, well, we don't need these rules anymore. Forget about concerns about density, forget about some of these zoning requirements. What red tape are we talking about getting rid of?
Yeah, when we have conversations around density, we need to ensure that when we talk about the construction of housing and density, oftentimes the denser, the more affordability that you can work into the scope of that project. So looking at, you know, what are folks seeking city funding for and what is your public dollars going towards helping facilitate and how can we have an expectation that there is deeper affordability? Ultimately, with this proposal, we're exploring essentially for folks to be willing to participate in this program. It wouldn't necessarily be mandated, but it's an opportunity for nonprofit and for-profit developers who want to participate to participate. What we're going to see is through the policy process, this will get agendized in governance and then get sent over to a council committee where council and stakeholders will be able to give additional recommendations and critiques of the policy.
So, you know, I wonder how much, I mean, what we're talking about right now, like I said, is kind of wonky and deep in the woods, and there's a lot of granularity about this. But for the average person, family in San Antonio, as they look at their income, household income, and they look at the rising cost of what it takes to provide dependable, safe shelter for them, they say, how do I need to know about some of these policy changes or how much do they need to know or how do they communicate to you the lives that they're living in? And so we're going to continue to address that when we come back from the break. Our number is 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio is District 5 Councilperson Terry Castillo. She is at the point of the spear trying to take on San Antonio's affordability housing crisis. I don't know if it's a crisis right now. We've seen a crisis in other cities. What they're trying to do is prevent a crisis. We could say we're in a crunch, we're in a squeeze, we anticipate a crisis, but by using progressive policy changes, looking around the state to see what works. But there are people in San Antonio who are in crisis. They see the rising cost of rents, unnecessary fees for rents, and trying to buy a home for them, and it just becomes further and further away from them. How can they deal with that? How can we get a grip on affordable housing in San Antonio? If you got a question or a comment, give us a call. 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. So, Councilmember Castillo, what do your constituents, the people in District 5, what do they tell you about their housing problems?
It's a wide spectrum of housing issues that they're facing, and we know that the work starts before the disaster hits. And as you've mentioned, we are on the cusp of a housing crisis, and I'm grateful for the leadership of Ron Nirenberg on implementing and leading the way with the Strategic Housing Implementation Plan. We have plenty of more work to do, and oftentimes our constituent services team is fielding constituent services cases with folks who are facing eviction, sleeping in their car, at risk of eviction, or homeowners who are at risk of losing their home to demolition. So there's a wide need to ensure that, one, we continue to invest in our city programs like home rehab, major and minor rehab under one roof program. But ultimately, what we're also seeing is, you know, so many vacant lots in our neighborhoods, many of which did have homes at one point, but they were demolished through the Building and Standards Board process. And that has created nuisance and concern for many of our neighbors. So how can we ensure that if it is a city-owned lot that's going through the process of being sold and or gifted to a nonprofit developer, how can we ensure that it's going towards building and constructing deeply affordable housing? So many of our neighbors have concerns with vacant lots. And I think it's also a great opportunity, one, not only to ensure that we're creating and addressing the need for deep affordability, but also at the same time, these are vacant lots that don't have a structure. So the taxable value is very low. So I think there's opportunity for us to ensure that we're housing individuals and also turning it into a productive property as well. But the need for housing is vast. Oftentimes we hear from constituents about their child who's 30 years old, who's looking for a safe and affordable quality place to live. And it's very tough to find anything in their neighborhood. And if they find something, oftentimes it's outside of the district. So then they have that conversation about, moving away from the community. And I think it's important that we talk about how can we ensure that our kids and our family members who want to stay in the neighborhood have an opportunity to with quality, safe and affordable housing.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You want to tell us about your experience looking for affordable housing? Have you felt the crunch? Have you been squeezed out of where you used to live and now you're trying to figure things out? Give us a call. Let's go to Kevin on the phones. And Kevin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm on the other side of the issue because our neighborhood has been targeted with many affordable or low-income housing projects. I'm in the Missions District, and we recently had a development that would have been within an eighth of a mile from Mission San Jose. So the developers are looking for the vacant property and the tax breaks being, afforded by the city. Unfortunately, our neighborhood already has five low-income housing projects on the San Antonio River. It is squashing any type of development in this area, and I feel that the city is pushing this through without concern for the neighborhoods.
Kevin, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you bringing that to our table. And so, Councilmember Castillo, of course, we want to protect the viewshed of the historic UNESCO missions, and that's important to us. And so, as we know, recognize the need for more affordable housing, we also have to weigh other things as well, which is protecting San Antonio's culture and history. So can you respond to Kevin's call?
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for the comment. A couple of things, right? When we look at City of San Antonio budget survey data, what comes to the top throughout many of our city council districts is the need to prioritize and invest in homeless outreach, homeless support, and affordable housing. Whether it comes from a place of out of sight or out of mind or compassion, the solution to ensuring that we have folks out the street is some type of shelter. And when we talk about the need for deeply affordable housing and where it's located, I want us to talk about the role and the importance of shelter and how when we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the importance of shelter. And I'm a strong proponent that when we talk about poverty and or low-income individuals, that the solution to ensuring that folks are able to move up that economic, socioeconomic ladder is access to housing. And I think we need to have a conversation about how do we ensure that folks have the tools and resources and shelter to move up rather than reallocate poverty and or low-income people throughout the city. Because ultimately, whether you're poor in the Dominion or poor in District 5, you're still poor. And what we need to ensure is that folks have the tools necessary, whether it's educational workforce development, to move up.
But it does seem maybe that Kevin was saying that in his area, in the Mission District, is he correct in his view that there's a lot of the housing, affordable housing projects, city housing projects going in that one area? Do we not want to cluster it in one particular neighborhood or city council district? We want it spread out. What's the strategy?
Yeah, I think it's important that if there's a need and there's the financial ability to construct deeply affordable housing and or affordable housing, that we have a responsibility to produce and keep people housed. Ultimately, I am a strong proponent that everyone, whether you're on the lower end of the economic ladder or the top, that we all deserve access to community resources like the missions or parks. We all deserve access to these assets, and we shouldn't discriminate and or move people away from community assets based off of their income.
I don't want to misinterpret what Kevin was talking about. He didn't bring this up, but there are some people who think, oh, you're bringing affordable housing projects to my neighborhood, and they have this NIMBY, not in my backyard, view that's going to, other problems will come along with that, including increase in crime. There's nothing that actually demonstrates that there will be an increase in crime if you bring solutions to a stressed community, but you know, how do you respond to people who think that way?
I think it's a public education is a huge piece, right, in letting folks know that ultimately this improves quality of life for individuals by providing access to shelter and or transportation. I think it's I would critique suggesting that low individuals are criminal and or attract criminal activity. So I just would encourage more conversations and community education with individuals who hold that sentiment.
So the city, you have this strategic housing implementation plan, SHIP, and this is a overall framework, housing policy framework, that the city has adopted, making housing a priority for city council, for the city to come up with solutions. And there's four key principles that are tied to this, that you want to provide housing that's affordable, that's quality, accessible, and housing choice. The thing about quality, I want to kind of focus on that because I think we're having a problem with that now in San Antonio, because I see a lot of reporting about housing, apartment complexes that are just horrendous in quality. Staircases falling down, people who are not even, you know, but the people who live there feel like they really can't do anything about these conditions because this is all they can afford. And if they complain, they'll be retaliated against. And so the question is, like, how do we maintain standards? How do we maintain quality? How do we keep people safe, but also keep it affordable?
The city of San Antonio, and I'm grateful for the leadership of Dr. Acha, the chair of the Planning and Community Development Committee, because we were able to develop and discuss a multifamily inspection code compliance team. And recently, through a conversation around Airbnbs, we were able to increase the fee to add an additional code compliance officer to navigate and inspect the compliance of multifamily units. Ultimately, we need to ensure that we're supporting that team and crew to ensure that they have the capacity to, one, issue notices of what may be out of compliance, and then when accountability needs to happen, issue that violation. But a trend that we're seeing is, you know, in regards to tenants who are paying their rent and then utilities are getting shut off, how do we ensure that there is accountability for these landlords to that are receiving their rent but then failing to pay their utilities, putting their tenants at risk of not having water? And I think that's a policy that we need to explore on what that accountability looks like. But ultimately, what we're sharing with community is now you can call 311 and report an issue that you're having within your complex, and code will go out there, right? But we also want to ensure that tenants are also submitting maintenance requests. So submit a maintenance request and have the expectation that it's going to be addressed. If it doesn't, right, we want to ensure that you're also reporting it to 311. And code compliance has been doing a great job in ensuring that San Antonio tenants are having a responsiveness when it comes to compliance of their multifamily units.
You mentioned apartment complexes that have not paid their water bills. Recently, SAWS, San Antonio Water System, had to shut some complexes off. They were hundreds of thousands of dollars behind in their water payments. Some of these were nonprofits that were running these apartment complexes. And did that get to, you know, the city councils? Like, is there a policy that says, okay, SAWS, do that? I mean, because, you know, if no one pays for water, pretty soon no one has water. So how do we balance that?
So the practice is that typically the San Antonio Water Authority will notify us about accounts that are at risk of disconnection. They do an extensive job with outreach to ensure that the property owner is aware of potential payment plans that they may qualify for and ways to get them on track. However, what we've run into are some multifamily landlords that just are non-compliant, and the day before the water is about to get shut off, they pay off the balance or contribute some type of payment to keep the water on. What we need to work towards is accountability for landlords. What we're seeing are tenants who are paying their rent, right? It's an all bills paid unit. So they're paying for their use of water. However, those funds aren't making their way to the San Antonio, to SAWS. And we need some type of mechanism on accountability for those landlords who fail to pay the water bill.
And so when people call 311 and say, I'm living in these substandard, I don't have hot water, we don't have heat, we don't have air conditioning, what can the city actually do?
Essentially, similar with the residential property owner, lay out what the code violations are, what's out of compliance, and what their expected deadline of compliance is. Ultimately, if they fail to come into compliance within the given deadline, it then escalates to a citation, and then the process escalates depending on the next steps that the property owner does or does not take. What I encourage folks to do, because retaliation and fear of retaliation are very real concerns that many residents come to our field office to share. So not to give my colleagues more work, but what I encourage folks to do is come by your council field office to share those concerns, and we can work on our end on getting code out there. But the expectation is the violations are given, it escalates to citation if necessary, and the process escalates depending on what steps the landlord does or does not take.
But we're talking about public health and safety in connection to these circumstances, and it should be a high priority item.
And there should be a strong accountability in terms of what that citation looks like for landlords who put the health and safety of their tenants at risk.
So we're going to take another break here. The number to call in if you've got a question or comment, we definitely want to hear from people who are dealing with the brunt of the affordable housing problem, 833-877-8255. Source continues right after this. The This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about affordable housing in San Antonio. We know it's rough out there. And City Council, District 5 Council Member Terry Castillo has announced two city housing policies that she says will increase the number of affordable housing availability in San Antonio. And you can call in and ask questions, give comments. We want to hear from you. What are you seeing? What are you experiencing? The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. Councilmember Castillo, you want to take advantage of or do more with community land trust affordability opportunities in San Antonio. What is a community land trust?
So there's a pretty lengthy process in establishing a community land trust. And right now there are two in the city of San Antonio that are going about that process but haven't received the official certification. One is with the Mexican American Unity Council, as well as the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. And Culturalingua is also exploring the model. And what this does, it works towards essentially creating a model where the land is owned by a nonprofit and the structure on that property is leased and or sold to a property owner. So it removes the burden of paying the property taxes for individuals who may not have an opportunity to purchase a home. And depending on the structure of the community land trust, many of them have different stipulations. For example, a community land trust can ensure that the home can be only sold at the rate in which it was purchased. Some community land trusts have a practice in which you can accrue equity and sell it at the rate in which the structure has increased in value. So there's different models of community land trust. And right now, those are the couple in the city of San Antonio who are exploring this model. And essentially what it does is it increases access for individuals who may struggle to potentially pay property taxes for their home by removing the property tax for the property itself, and you're paying and or buying the structure on that parcel.
All right, I got questions, but first I want to get to a caller, and our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have Jeff, and Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, hi. You're on the air, Jeff.
Yeah, I had a question. I'm paying rent at a house, and I put in my work orders and stuff, and they'll go see the problem, what the issue is, and then after that, they never return to come fix the problem, and they just leave it like that. And I broke a window recent on accident, a glass window, and they said the windows are not part of the property, so they cannot fix the window that's broken. So what I did, I just put a plastic cover on it, and that was it. I just left it as is.
All right, Jeff, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. It's a good snapshot of what people are going through. And so, Councilmember Castillo.
Yeah, Jeff, what I would encourage, right, is reaching out to your city council office and sharing the information of the property so that way they can work towards a resolution. We had a constituent come into our field office with similar concerns regarding a gate and a door. And we walked her through next steps, but she had read the City of San Antonio's Know Your Rights, Renter's Rights pamphlet. And she had taken the steps of, one, she came to our office, and I believe she reached out to her congressional representative as well. And we were able to come to a resolution for her and her neighbors. So, you know, just ensuring that you are reaching out to your representative so that way they can assist on getting a resolution. And encouraging folks to also familiarize themselves with their lease. The constituent who came to our office, she had read her lease and said, you know, it states in our lease that this is what they should be taking care of with maintenance. So she did her homework on it, and my team was walking over with the renter's right. She's like, I already read that. That's why I'm here, and that's why I've taken these steps. So a very important work done by the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. But also, you know, ensuring that, you know, we represent you and we work for you. So if you're running into these issues, come by your field office with the issue and we'll work towards a resolution.
But dealing with a broken window in your home and you cover it up with a plastic sheet or whatever you have, that just invites more problems. You know, it seems like there's a security issue. There's a, you know, comfort issue with insulation and other issues that, you know, who knows, raccoons could be coming through your window right now. it's just like, you know, there are a myriad of problems that are associated with not being able to provide quality, affordable housing to our communities, or being able to, you know, figure out a way to create a framework so that, you know, free enterprise or nonprofits or whatever can go out and provide these things. And if they can't, then we, like what you're doing is trying to figure out, why isn't this working? Why, what are the barriers to keep quality, affordable housing from being established in these communities where we know it's needed? And there are plenty of people who want this and will pay a reasonable price for it. What are the barriers? And what have you seen is, like, what are the biggest problems?
Oftentimes, when it comes to new construction and ensuring that there's deep affordability within the new proposed project, is that the affordability doesn't pencil out. And oftentimes, if it's not dense enough, we're restricted in the amount of affordability we can have within a project. But with the STAY-SA affordability program that we've proposed, is how can we talk about the cost of parking spots, right? We're having this ongoing conversation around transit-oriented development, a green and silver line, and how can we talk about less parking spots for more affordable units? If the goal is that more individuals are relying on public transit to get to and work and to places of leisure, how are we ensuring that folks are relying on that new public transit line? And is there a need for massive parking lots that are taking the place of where potential affordable units are? So that's part of the STAY essay, is talking about, you know, how can we talk about parking requirements along transit or in development and or the green or silver line that incentivizes individuals to take public transit?
Right. So traditional arguments against high density development is that it will increase road traffic coming in and out of that location. We've got all these people here, everyone's got a car, it's going to clog up the roads aren't built for this, so we can't have high density development in this area. But if there is quality public transportation that's provided for that area, then that no longer becomes the problem that it was. And so having a revised look at, well, does this make sense anymore? We can ease off on these high density limitations. Is that it?
Yes. And right now, the city of San Antonio via NVIA are on the cusp of something really innovative. But we have a responsibility on the policymaking side to ensure that we don't run into and are responding to more cars on the road along these transit corridors. How can we be proactive by implementing policies as we've proposed to minimize those concerns? Because the goal of the silver and green line is frequency, and folks are able to hop on and off of a bus to get from point A to point B. And with that, right, you don't necessarily need a vehicle if the goal is faster and more accessible transit.
In addition to that, there have been limitations in San Antonio preventing the addition of additional dwelling units on a person's property. These casitas that people are now seem to be interested in building in their yards that they may have in a backyard. And so now it seems like there's an interest in kind of lifting those restrictions. And so they can still have to follow code requirements to build something like that. And people are seeing that is a way to create accessory dwelling units, allowing homeowners to build additional units on their property, like a backyard cottage, and that this would increase the housing supply and provide affordable rental options.
Yeah, and with the accessory dwelling units, there's type 1 and type 2. And what we're focused on is type 1, right? Those are short-term rentals that are leased to individuals who are renting long-term, right? Type 2 is often Airbnbs. And the data with Airbnbs has a huge impact on rental rates and property taxes. So we want to ensure that folks who are renting for long-term tenants, that they have an opportunity to do that, and we're removing barriers.
And so does that seem like something that we'll see more of that in San Antonio? It seems like there's a lot of interest.
Yeah, we're hopeful, and we hear from many DeFi residents, right? How can we help streamline that process? They have the lot and the green space behind their home, but how can they get access to the tools to finance the construction of that accessory dwelling unit? And what that could look like is many of them, right, they have kids who have graduated college and are looking for work or are currently working.
But or there could be, you know, other people in the extended family, maybe elderly people who want to live there. They can, you know, have a multi-generational household living on site and take care of each other and take the burden off of, you know, other government resources. So there's a lot of good things that could come from that. So is that something that y'all are trying to incentivize? Or?
That's a conversation that we've had within the Planning and Community Development Committee. It's around those fees for those types of units. But what we're essentially looking at is how, again, right, how are we looking at setbacks and how can we do more with less space to construct more affordable housing?
Right, so setbacks are basically the rules that say how close I can build my house to my neighbor's house. There's got to be a certain amount of space in between, and it makes a lot of sense. And that, and how close can I get to the street? How close can I get to the alley and back in my house? And so by lifting or relaxing the setback requirements, is that in progress?
What we are proposing for discussion, but right now these are council consideration requests that we have submitted and filed. They will go to the governance committee, and the committee will then decide which council committee that they'll go to for further discussion. So there's opportunity for everything that we've discussed today and is written in the council consideration request to evolve.
All right, so we're going to take another break here. Barbara, I see you on the board. I'll get you on the air when we come back. Our number is 833-877-8255. The conversation about affordable housing continues. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a conversation with District 5 Council Member Terry Castillo, talking about affordable housing. She is bringing some plans to City Council. Right now, they're working their ways through the committees. Eventually, it'll get to the, we hope, we hope it'll get to the floor for a full council vote. But right now, it is an opportunity for the community to have their say, express what they need, express what they don't want to have happening in San Antonio, because this is your city and everyone should have an opportunity to give input because you're living the life of a San Antonian. Your experience matters. So give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Barbara on the phones. Barbara, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, both of you. What I wanted to bring to the table was the fact that the renters' rights meetings that are happening, I've been to quite a few, focus on large apartment complex owners and the landlords and the property managers that represent them. But there are, and especially when we're talking about adding ADUs to what we already are, to the stock of housing, I think we need to do some planning to educate landlords, small unit landlords. There's so many of them. And I think that we're not really respecting them when we have these meetings and they're trashing landlords left and right. And I've been to quite a few.
Barbara, thank you for the call. I do know that San Antonio has been having some meetings with landlords, offering them instructions on how they qualify for supplements and stuff to provide affordable housing. And I think those meetings have been pretty proactive and fruitful. So can you talk about that, Councilmember?
Yeah, thank you, Barbara, for highlighting that point. Right now, the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department is conducting outreach with renters' rights and just ensuring that folks are aware of processes that they can take to ensure that if they have a concern within their unit, how to work towards finding a resolution. I think there are a number of moving pieces, and I think Barbara raises a really good point, right? How can we also ensure that landlords are aware of whether it's what the code is and or potential resources? I had a very great conversation with the San Antonio Board of Realtors and some of my colleagues, and what we talked about was how can we potentially explore a minor rehab program for mom-and-pop landlords, because oftentimes what we hear from some smaller landlords is that if they have to make improvements to the home, even if they don't want to, sometimes they have to increase the rent to ensure that they make that back. So how can we explore expanding minor rehab, a program with the city of San Antonio? And it's highly utilized. Oftentimes we have more folks apply than we have resources for to help with some of those maintenance costs. So I think it's a good point to ensure that we're sharing with landlords what potential opportunity there is, and also what's the code, what may and may not be in compliance is something that we should continue to explore.
Well, let me ask you about renters' rights and draw this distinction that renters' rights are not squatters' rights. There's been recently a lot of attention in Texas about the problem of squatters. There was a San Antonio case that was highlighted recently in a Texas Senate hearing, and they were complaining that the squatter that had moved into their home was getting assistance from the city of San Antonio's renters' rights, and they weren't getting any assistance from SAPD in removing the squatter who was living in their home illegally. So, but you know, we have renters' rights deliberately to protect renters from people who are in, landlords who are operating in bad faith. So do we have to take another look at how do we keep squatters from taking advantage of that?
I think we need to, and this is why I think doing the renters' rights outreach is so important, because there's so much public education that I believe needs to take place around housing and unpacking what is affordable housing, deeply affordable housing, right? And who are the individuals we're talking about when we're talking about housing folks and deeply affordable housing? What we are having a conversation about, and this is why I'm grateful for Mr. Soto of Harlandale ISD coming to our press conference, was to highlight how his teachers are having difficulty finding affordable housing. And oftentimes folk have this narrative notion of what affordability houses, and they're not necessarily thinking about their teachers or substitute teachers as someone who needs affordable housing. So public education is something that we need to continue to invest in, and it's part of the campaign that NHSD has taken on, but also correcting and challenging narratives around deeply affordability and who should live where. And it's going to take all of us to have these conversations around what is affordable for San Antonio residents.
Let's go to the caller. We have Mary. The number is 833-877-8255. And Mary, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a 62-year-old woman. I have a job, and I lost my rental house during COVID. I was evicted. So I still have a job, but I'm not in Social Security, but I cannot afford anymore to come up with a deposit or, you know, to being able to rent on my own anymore. And also, I'm diabetic, so that's what I'm working, because I'm for the benefits, so I can pay for my medication. How can I rent something that I can live on my own?
So, Mary, where are you living these days? How are you surviving?
I'm in a motel. I live from motel to motel because that's all I can afford.
And, I mean, motels, I guess, isn't that more expensive than finding actual rental space?
Yeah, but how can I get a deposit? How can they want a deposit? They want the first rent, the last rent. And then I had, you know, and from there it goes. I don't have $10,000 to rent a house or rent an apartment right now.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. Real important that we heard from you today. Thank you so much. So there you have it, Councilmember Castillo. That's really how it works. People don't have that big, you know, lump of cash to move in someplace reliable, safe, affordable, and now they are paying more overall for less secure circumstances.
Yeah, and you know, thank you for calling in, Mary. And unfortunately, this is the case for so many San Antonio residents. As I mentioned, my constituent services team is often completing relocation services applications and or rental assistance applications. And while these two policy proposals are a step in the right direction, there's so much more work to be done. And we've had a conversation recently about How can we ensure that when we talk about Opportunity Home, we're not talking about them as a separate entity? The mayor of San Antonio appoints every individual on the Opportunity Home Board. So by extension, they are a reflection of our health and housing in the city of San Antonio. And I've been able to talk to some landlords about opportunity for improvement. We have so many individuals who have access to a voucher, but they aren't necessarily landlords who will accept the voucher. And it's often because sometimes there's issues with bookkeeping and that they will accept it. And then the landlord's responsible for back paying that rent, which adds a burden to landlords who, you know, are leasing to individuals with vouchers. But then the bookkeeping wasn't done correctly on Opportunity's home's end. And now they're responsible for paying back the subsidy that they received. So how can we work on that piece to where we ensure that it's appetizing for landlords to accept vouchers? So I think there's a lot of different moving pieces, a lot of housing work that we need to work on, but also ensuring that we're holding Opportunity Home accountable and working collaboratively, because they are an extension of the city of San Antonio and they are a reflection of the housing health in the city of San Antonio.
What is the connection between San Antonio's affordability housing problem and the rise that we have in folks who are unhoused? There are a lot of assumptions people make about folks who are unhoused, and that either, you know, they have substance abuse issues, problems, or mental health problems, or, you know, they want to be out there, that, you know, but what's the reality? I mean, it seems like we have to recognize that there are people out there who would rather have an apartment, they'd rather have a home, they'd rather have some stable living conditions, but they just can't get there.
About 6 years ago, I participated in a conversation around the For Everyone Home Initiative, and it's where we got together to discuss housing issues in the city of San Antonio. And there was this young man who Fabiola had met outside the library and brought him into the conversation. And when he was sharing his housing experience, he shared that he lived at the Victoria Courts near Hemisview. Those were demolished. He was relocated to the San Juan public housing units. Those were demolished. He was relocated and ended up at Haven for Hope. And what he shared was that as public housing was getting demolished, there were less vacant units for him to access to stay housed. And the trend and what's concerning is that we have an opportunity with Opportunity Home to continue to build and invest our public housing stock. That's permanently affordable housing stock that we can't lose, that we have a responsibility not to lose, because what that means is more individuals on the public housing waiting list with less available units, with housing shelters that are at capacity. So they are very intertwined, that we must ensure that our public housing authority continues to prioritize permanent affordability to ensure that we're chipping away at the issues that we're seeing. With the recent point in time count, what was highlighted is that we're seeing more unhoused children. Public housing, the majority of folks it houses is children. So we have a responsibility and plenty of work to work on.
Terry Castillo, so where are we on trying to get this through the council? You got to take it to the governance committee, and then what happens now, real quick?
It'll be on the governance committee, and then the council will give direction on which city council committee it'll be assigned to.
All right, and when do you think it'll go to a vote?
It'll be a lengthy debate.
All right, but we got opportunities for the people to weigh in, talk about the city that they want to have, and we appreciate you coming in today, Terry Castillo, and talking to us, taking some callers. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.